Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Inside Scoop Live. Hello, I'm Susan Violante. I'm your host for today. I'm really excited to be speaking on the phone with Giacomo Giammatteo, author of Murder Takes Time, from the Friendship and Honor series. In the neighborhood where Frankie Donovan grew up, he never broke an oath. He now has to decide which oath to honor. Does he keep the one he made to his friends when he was a kid, or the one he made when he became a cop? Murder Takes Time is not just a murder thriller, as it takes the reader in a journey inside the human code of morality, honor, and friendship many of us will have to face in some point of our lives. The main characters of Murder Takes Time grew up in Cleveland Heights, where Giacomo grew up, and many of the scenes in the book were taken from real-life experiences. This will be a great conversation as we explore Giacomo's personal views about our society while revisiting his own life experiences as well as some aspects of the story developed in his book. But before we start, let's learn a little bit more about Giacomo. Giacomo lives in Texas now, but he grew up in Cleveland Heights, which is a mixed ethnic neighborhood in Wilmington, Delaware, that sat on the fringes of the Italian, Irish, and Polish neighborhoods. Giacomo started his family at the age of 17 when he skipped college and got married right after high school. Somehow, he survived the transition to adulthood, but when his kids were young, he left the Northeast and settled in Texas, where his wife suggested they get a few animals. Well, they now have a full-blown animal sanctuary with rescues from all over. So by day, Giacomo is a headhunter scouring of the country for top talent to fill jobs in the biotech and medical device industry. In the evening, he helps his wife tend to the animals, and at night, late at night, he turns into a writer. For more information about Giacomo, visit www.giacomogiammatteo.com, or for short, www.giacomog.com. Hi, Giacomo. How are you today?
I'm great, Susan. Thanks for having me here.
Oh, thank you for being here. I love anything that has to do with Brooklyn because I have an Italian background, although I'm not from the U.S. originally. My parents migrated to South America instead. Your book, Murder Takes Time, is something for sure that I'm going to enjoy reading, and I wish I had the time to read it before this interview, but unfortunately I didn't. I will read it, though, because it has to do with so much in my background. I have a lot of friends in Brooklyn as well.
Oh, good, good.
But why don't we go into your background a little bit before and let our listeners know a little bit more about you.
Sure. So for me, I grew up in a little town called Wilmington, Delaware, which is about a couple of hours from Brooklyn. It's what I like to call a little big city. So it has all of the, you know, the parts of what a lot of the big northeastern cities have, you know, the ethnic communities and the infrastructure of the big city. But it was a fairly small town, about 100,000 people back then. And we grew up in a little place called Cleveland Heights. It was a mixed ethnic neighborhood, which mostly at that time, Italian, Irish, and Polish, but with a little bit of everything else in there. And it was one of the greatest places in the world to grow up. You know, it was a good time back then. It was after the World War II baby boom, and the whole place was full of kids, and it was a ball. You know, we got into a lot of trouble, but we had a lot of fun, and, you know, just about everybody in the neighborhood attended the Catholic school up on the hill. And the first, you know, you hear a lot nowadays about class sizes in schools, and if it gets into the 20s, you know, people are saying, geez, that's a lot of kids in a class. Back then in my first grade class, I think we had 65 or 66 kids and one nun to rule over it, you know, but they did it well. So it was a different time, different era, and a lot of fun. I think it was a great place to grow up.
Yeah, it sounds very much of like my own childhood in South America. We also all went to the same missionary Catholic school, and we were mostly Italian, Germans, and Americans, because in my hometown was all the oil companies that came from the U.S. So we kind of all the same. It just was a nice era, you know, I guess. More than, it didn't matter where you were, I think. It was a great time to live, but, you know, and grow up. It was very family-oriented.
Exactly.
But I saw in your bio that that you actually got married when you were 17, and you didn't go to a college or anything, and that caught my attention because the youth nowadays are all so focused on making sure they go to college, and actually a bachelor's degree doesn't give you much this time. That everybody has to have, you know, a master's degree and so on. So I wanted to find out from you, you know, in your time, you know, you're 17, you're just married. Let's kind of revisit your life a little bit to learn a little bit about the struggles that you went through as a teen being an adult.
Sure. It was kind of crazy. So I was barely 17. My wife was almost 17. And, you know, that could be a book by itself. It's one I've thought about telling sometimes. But it was different. It was a shock. I mean, I was a little bit of a wild kid. So making that switch from basically doing anything I wanted to do almost to taking care of my own kids was a huge change. And it wasn't the work. I'd worked all my life, so that didn't bother me. But it was the burden, I think, of suddenly having a wife and a baby that were depending, you know, on me and only me. And it was a little jarring. And this was back in the time when very few women held full-time jobs.
Yeah.
So, you know, so my wife and I, we talked about it, and we were huge on family. We had grown up that way. So we decided she'd stay home with the baby, I'd provide, but little did I know how difficult that would be without the education. Basically, the only jobs I could get back then were, you know, laboring for construction companies and things like that. It was grueling work. It didn't pay much at all. Luckily, you know, we just kept our nose to the grindstone, if you will, and kept plugging away, you know, moving up, and eventually started my own business. And then, you know, it became apparent that without an education, you weren't going to get too many places. So I started looking for occupations and things I could do that did not require the college education. And I think I just naturally fell into sales. So that's where the rest of my life went into the, I ended up becoming a headhunter, but it's really a sales related type job.
Yeah. And do you think that nowadays a teen that chooses your path will get a harder or a tougher time finding the type of jobs that you were able to get on sales than before? Or, I mean, can you compare a little bit, since you have kids that went through your teenage times, more or less close to our time? What do you think between what a teen parents are going through now and compared to what you went through and your wife during your time?
Well, I think probably for most of them, the biggest obstacle isn't even education, because that's going to be a stigma no matter what time you're in. It may be a little bit worse now. I don't know, but it's still a problem, especially if you want to get into certain jobs. I think the biggest problem might be the support of the family. Back when I grew up, at least in my family and my wife's family, everything was family oriented. So even though we got no financial support because they didn't have it, we got tremendous amount of moral support. And that might even be more important than the financial. You know, there are times when you're just, you know, going through and working your tail off and you're saying, good Lord, you know, this is tough. And the moral support helps more than anything.
Yeah, I agree. I disagree with a lot of people that I know that are, well, I have two girls, and I have 17-year-old is the youngest and the oldest one is 20. And, of course, I want them to go to college, but in the end, I just want them to be happy.
Exactly.
Because life can be very short or very long. You might as well make the best of it, right? So, but I noticed, and some of their friends actually are teen parents, and actually a couple of my oldest ones decided not even to get married. They just had the baby, and the father is involved and whatever, but their parents felt that they were too young to just commit to each other. But in some cases, I've seen that these teen pregnancies were actually blessings, because if they wouldn't have, their paths could have been not so good. You know what I mean? They had to grow up quickly, and the reason it was a blessing is because they had their family support.
I agree. It can make a huge difference, yes.
Yeah, so, it's interesting, though, that, you know, a lot of people think also that when you are pursuing your dream, you know, it's impossible if you don't go to college or whatever. Did you get to live your dream? What would you say about that?
Yeah, I guess it depends. I mean, when I was young, long ago growing up, I always thought I wanted to be a lawyer. Now, without an education, formal education, obviously you can't be a lawyer. But, you know, I certainly didn't let that stop me, and I've never looked back on it. And now that I'm older and hopefully a little wiser, I say, thank goodness I didn't become a lawyer, right? I love what I do. I'm lucky. I mean, I've got tremendous family. I absolutely love everything I do, and now I'm writing, so that makes it even better.
And that's even great because a lot of other people think that authors have to be this type of academical literate gurus or something, and it's not true.
Yeah, let's face it. The problem is that. Everybody has a misconception. Education, I mean, by definition, what is it? It means you've learned something. And just because you don't have somebody certify you and say, some institution say, here, you learned from us, so that doesn't mean you didn't learn. So everybody can pick up a book and learn.
That is very well said. There is this very old movie called At the Racer's Edge, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I love that movie because when this guy, the protagonist, goes to work in the mines in Europe, the most cultural people that he met was in those mines, because they were just so seasoned. They had so many books that they were reading. They were more educated than many of the friends that he had on the high level of society in the U.S. in the 30s.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But, well, all we have to do nowadays, just take a look at somebody like Steve Jobs or Bill Gates. I mean, they didn't finish college,
That is true. So it really depends on you, whether you live your dreams, whether you educate yourself. And unfortunately, sometimes a piece of paper, the certification, helps you get a better salary to start up.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean that you're going to get far in life just because you have that piece of certificate. So I agree. And look at you now. You're author of a few books. And your newest one is Murder Takes Time. And these are all e-books, Giacomo, or are they?
No, they're both print and e-books. Of course, these are independently published, so the print books are available online, but they're tougher to get into the actual physical stores. I'm working on it, but they're still available only online right now.
Mm-hmm. And I really liked, the series name of your last book, and it's called Friendship and Honor Series. What inspired this name of yours, if you can elaborate?
Sure. Actually, there's a... I'm glad you asked that because the book is listed as a mystery thriller genre and a murder mystery, but it's really not quite that. The Friendship and Honor series defines it better. To me, as I look back on my life and everything growing up and even today in the world, nothing is ever black and white, especially when it comes to rules or laws. And, you just look in the news almost any day how many times people have been unjustly convicted or let go when they shouldn't be. So I tried to raise some of the questions that I experienced in my own life of, what is right or wrong? What's right to you might not be right to me. And so these characters are three kids that grew up in a neighborhood, in fact, very much like I did. A lot of it is based on that. And it explores their friendship and what happens to that friendship and, the loyalty they felt for each other as they grow and life happens. Life takes them down separate paths and things start to happen and, certain ones will stick and certain ones won't. So it's a lot more than just a murder mystery. Obviously, there's murder involved. There's some mystery to it, but it's more of a life story about these three people.
So this is going to be more than a trilogy series? Or?
Yes, okay. Yes. So right now I've got three written in that series, but six planned.
Cool. That is really neat. And I really like where you go with this because a lot of mysteries that, people read them and they're very entertaining and thrilling. But to have some depth into it, about our human nature, it's really neat. It makes a very complete picture of what people go through in cases like those, you know, where your life ethics are in the game.
Exactly.
Yeah. I also I was looking at in your blog, and I loved your entry from yesterday about your aunt Rose.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, I really loved it. Actually, you actually it kind of got me a little bit in a teary because it really moved me, being a mother, and you know I'm very close to my uncles and aunts too, and unfortunately, basically most of them have passed, and I was very very close. So that you are able to enjoy your aunt is great. It's great. So, but tell me a little bit about the thorns in your life.
Yeah, there are plenty of those. So when we talk about the thorns, you know, I was very lucky. So early childhood, I don't have a single complaint about my childhood. I think I had the two best parents in the world. You know, my kids are all wonderful, but boy, we had one huge thorn. It's my youngest son, and I love him to death, and he knows it, but he got into drugs just so bad and for so many years. And that, for my wife and I, was the most difficult thing we've ever had to deal with. And we had no idea how to deal with it.
Yeah, I don't think anybody does.
You know, and the thing was, we handled it all wrong. You know, we were embarrassed by it. We were afraid to talk to people about it. You know, we didn't know how to talk to him about it. It was terrible. He almost died. I think they may have even declared him dead. I don't remember, but he was in the ICU for weeks, and, you know, we were sitting around worrying whether he's going to be alive, be brain dead, whatever. But luckily, that actually was a good thing in the long run. We got him into a rehab center, and he ended up turning his life around completely. It's been 3 years now, and he now runs a rehab center. And he pretty much dedicates his whole life to helping other people like him. So that all turned out good. But boy, for 8-10 years, it made life miserable and just so confusing. And we had no idea what to do about it.
Yeah, and you went through all those, through the biggest thorns with him. And look at the big rose that you have now.
Exactly, exactly.
Yeah, that's very admirable. And
we'll be back with more Inside Scoop Live after these important announcements.
Inside Scoop Live is a global internet-based broadcast specializing in interviewing published authors about their current books and areas of expertise. Join us and hear both well-known and upcoming writers talking candidly about their life experience as well as the business of being an author in today's literary world. Always interesting and current, we strive to bring our audience high-quality discussions that spotlight a vast diversity of authors in the field today. Our interviews are available 24/7 through direct podcast as well as MP3 download for your convenience. Please visit us on InsideScoopLive.com. Inside Scoop Live is a global internet-based broadcast specializing in interviewing published authors about their current books and areas of expertise. Join us and hear both well-known and upcoming writers talking candidly about their life experience as well as the business of being an author in today's literary world. Always interesting and current, we strive to bring our audience high-quality discussions that spotlight a vast diversity of authors in the field today. Our interviews are available 24/7 through direct podcast as well as MP3 download for your convenience. Please visit us on InsideScoopLive.com.
We all know it was not easy, so that tells you a lot about the sense of union in a family, you know, that you're there, that can help you kind of overcome your own mistakes as a father, but also whether you agree or not and you have a storm with your son because of his illness with drugs, he must have felt that love, you know, that you were both there in with him.
Yeah, he's a great kid, you're right. Thankfully, that kind of message or sentiment carries through, and luckily it did there.
Yeah, and you and your wife have been together for 43 years, I heard?
Well, be 43 on July 4th, believe it or not.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, it's been a long time. In fact, we were talking about it the other night. I said we've been married almost three times as long as we weren't married. So.
Yeah, I remember my parents, they married over 50, and my oldest one once asked me, why do Nona and Nono argue so much? And I'm like, well, and I looked at her and I said, because when they got married and you said till death do us apart, like the life expectancy was 40 years. They're like 80-some years now, you know?
Yeah, I love that. You're right, though. Yeah, just because you're married all that time doesn't mean there isn't arguing. Yeah.
Laughed and but how do you stay married? I mean, I've been married for just a little bit over 20 years. I mean, I just went into my 21 year.
Good for you.
Yeah. So I'm wondering. Also, my husband is also Italian, and we do argue, and I think that's what keeps it fun. But I wanna, you know, how do you do it? You know, nowadays, especially with all this, you know, openness and you know, and just. That I find very challenging.
Well, you know, I mean, again, I think I'll have to point back to the way we were raised. We were both raised, my wife's also Italian, both raised in very large family environment. So it wasn't just our own family. I mean, I was the middle of six kids, and she had five in her family. But in the neighborhood, you had relatives galore. You know, at a get-together, it wasn't unusual to have maybe 100 relatives there. And so... And everybody was always supportive, and family was everything. So that carries through. And you know, when you're married, you bring that with you. You don't leave it behind. And so actually, the early parts of our marriage, as much as I like to say, geez, it was tough being a teen, you know, adult, a teen father. They were probably easier than later, because when we were young, we were focused entirely on just surviving, you know, making enough money to live and taking care of the kids. It was after the kids, you know, started getting out and they were grown and off to college that you realized all of a sudden it's been 20 years and you two have changed a lot. You know, we didn't read the same books, didn't watch the same movies, didn't listen to the same music. And so that's when you have to start looking at, you know, what do we do with each other now?
Actually, that's exactly where my husband and I are now, because we're almost empty nesters. My oldest one is out of college, and my other daughter, we're basically dropping her off this summer to Florida. So it is scary, and I told my husband, you know, I'm scared that you're going to come up with weird stuff. I don't even know who you are anymore. And, you know, we laugh about it, but it is scary and intimidating to a certain point.
It is. And, you know, we've found, I mean, we've had our trials with it, but we found that I think that it comes, you know, boils down to sharing the things we do like together. And luckily, we've got this animal sanctuary, and we both are just huge lovers of animals. And so that has become probably the number one thing that we enjoy sharing with each other. And we've got 41 animals, so that's a lot to share there.
Wow. How do you come up with that idea to have an animal sanctuary? I mean, I know you love your animals, but it's not easy to take care. I'm a pet lover, and I rescue dogs, and, you know, it's a lot of work. And how do you go about deciding, yeah, I'm going to start saving all these animals in my backyard?
That was my wife. So yes, so we did start when we just lived in a, you know, regular house in a subdivision, and we, you know, all of a sudden we had six different animals, and I said, you know, we can't continue this, but we both loved it. So we started looking for some property. We ended up with a place that has about 15 acres, and of course, once we got there, the animals started growing. People found out, you know, animal control will now call us if they have, you know, abused animal or an abandoned animal or things like that. So we've got a little bit of everything.
So is it also wild animals? Or?
Yes, we've got the most recent is actually my best buddy. The most recent is a wild boar that came here 2 years ago.
Wow.
He was almost dead, but now he's about 350 pounds or so, and
wow.
He's a big baby with me, but he's pretty terrifying if you just look at him.
Wow. Do you think that this is something that you ever discussed when you were, you know, younger?
Never even thought about it,
wow.
No.
Wow. How long have you had the sanctuary?
Formally, 12 years now. It's really been more like 18, but was part of that was in the house. But we've actually got it set up as an IRS sanctioned, you know, sanctuary, and it's been 12 years since we've done that.
That is so neat. And so,
Yeah, I love animals. I've had all kinds of stuff from you know, armadillos to ferrets and dogs and birds and cats and bunnies and you name it, I've had it. But I never to 41.
Yeah, it gets to be a tremendous amount of work and, of course, very costly, too.
Yeah.
But just the work in feeding them, taking care of them, you know, building, fixing fences, doing whatever is a lot.
Do you get people to help out? I mean, do you get, like, community help at all?
Occasionally we get some kids from the local schools who, you know, who are looking to do extra credit work and things like that. And that's nice, but, you know, it's a nice gap filler.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you, I think that, you know, for somebody who got married at 17 and against all odds, you basically have lived your dream.
I think so, too.
I mean, just look at you, you know, you're a published author, you have your sanctuary, you're helping animals. And I want to tell our listeners, your last book name is Murder Takes Time. And they can actually learn more about you. And I really encourage everybody to read your blog and your website. And your website is GiacomoGianMatteo.com. And that is GIACOM as in mother O, GIAMMATTEO.com. And where else can they find your books online?
Amazon. Is where it's being sold right now, and it's exclusive there until mid-July. After mid-July, it'll be at Barnes & Noble, Apple, Kobo, all of them. But for right now, it's only on Amazon.
That is really neat. What would you tell, you know, we're getting close to running out of time, but I really am interested to find out, what would you tell, there's two questions, basically. One is, what would you tell to yourself when you were 17, knowing what you know now and having lived the life that you live now, what advice would you give yourself in a dark moment when you were 17?
Be more patient. When you're 17, at least I was very impatient. Everything had to come, you know, today or tomorrow. So that would be the number one advice I'd give any 17-year-old.
I'm going to make my 17-year-old daughter listen to this.
Yeah.
And the other question that I like to ask is, with everything that you've lived through and, you know, in the stories, I don't know if you reflect portions of your ideals and, you know, which I think we do all, because I'm also a writer. So
mm-hmm.
I think we all put a lot of ourselves in our stories. What would you want your kids to take out of your books and your life, if anything, that one thing that you wish to make sure that they get from you?
Well, almost. I think if anybody that reads the book will see it, and, you know, they'll probably know it comes from me, the whole title of the series, The Friendship and Honor, I think family, friendship, honor, keeping your own honor, you know, whatever you believe in, you stick to it, and that's what I believe, and that's how my wife and I have lived our lives. So that's it, friendship and honor, family.
Yeah, it's. I remember my uncle a long time ago, he passed, one of my favorite uncles, he told me, never forget where you came from.
Exactly.
Yeah, because that's going to help you figure out where you don't want to go. If you don't know where you want to go, that's fine. But if you always remember where you came from, you'll know where you don't want to go.
I agree. Great advice from your uncle.
Yeah, and that's how I still don't know what I want. But
be patient. Be patient, Susan.
Yeah. This is great. I want to thank you so much for being here. Do you have any events coming up or anything, or do you have a website for your sanctuary for people to find out more about your animals or anything like that? Or?
Yeah, the sanctuary website is still being built, so it'll be up in about a month or so. But as far as events, I'm getting ready to launch my second book probably in August. It's called A Bullet for Carlos, but it'll be on my website. If they go there, they'll see the, you know, anything related to that.
Okay, cool. So, again, your website is www.GiacomoGianMatteo.com, and that is GIACOMMATTEO.com. I encourage everybody to check out your book and your website, and most of all, read your blog.
Thank you.
I think you're a gifted transmitter of life lessons in a
very short way. It just totally teared me up whenever. It just took me back to my own family. So I really, really, really enjoyed it.
Well, thank you, Susan. I really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for being here. This was a very nice, refreshing interview for me. I feel like I'm talking to a cousin or something. So this is really neat. Thank you for being here, and I look forward to reading your book.
All righty. Have a great day.
Thank you. Everybody, thank you so much for being here, and until next time.